Blog Talk Radio.
You live it, breathe it, dream about it. You poured your blood, sweat, and tears into it. And this year, victory is yours. Because you've got FantasySportsWarehouse.com as your secret weapon. Fantasy Sports Warehouse is your one-stop shop for fantasy sports products, blogs, and the latest info. Go to FantasySportsWarehouse.com to get info to help you dominate the fantasy sports season wherever you go.
All right, guys. Welcome to another episode of Pine Tar Talk with Mike and Ben. Mike Salverde, as always, you can find him on Twitter at RFL Red Zone, and myself, Ben Samuels, you can find me at Roto_Project700. Now, Mike, if I had told you that a week into the baseball season, we were going to have none other than the Atlanta Braves at the top of the NL East, would you believe me or would you call me crazy?
I would have called you crazy without a doubt. I'm totally surprised by that myself. And, you know, they just keep rolling. They're not falling behind or anything, you know. So two series in, and they're looking amazingly well so far. So it'll be interesting to see what the rest of the season looks like. But yeah, I'm definitely shocked by it.
Yeah, you know, it's nice to see Freddie Freeman putting together a solid year so far. He's kind of been the catalyst for the offense. But you know, they've had much better pitching than I thought they were, both the starting pitching and at the back end as well. You know, they're 5-1 at this point. You know, it's funny. I was looking at the standings a little bit earlier today, and I noticed that the NL East was almost an exact reverse order from what I would have expected, quote unquote. And obviously, you know, it's really early, so these are super early. We're 6 games into 162 game season, so we're just kind of having some fun talking about this at the moment. But this isn't too concerning or something to get excited about one way or the other. But from the top to bottom in the NL East, we've got Atlanta, the Mets, Philadelphia, Washington, and then Miami. Now, I would have flipped Washington and Miami if I would have had, if they were in reverse order. I would have Washington at the top. But they're basically, like I said, in reverse order of what you could have expected. So I think that kind of just proves, once again, it's only a week in, but it kind of proves the volatility and, kind of anything can happen in this sport, I think more so than any other sport. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, for sure. And I think also it has a lot to do with the fact that you can't always trust what's on paper. You know, a paper could look golden, but it could be worth, zero. So when you're looking at teams like the Atlanta Braves and you're looking at the roster before, the first game of the season, and you look down and you're basically like, who in the hell are these guys? You know, it doesn't mean that they're not going to perform well as a team. So, and the Padres are only 4-3. They're close, just a little bit over 500. So that's another example where you would say, okay, well, top to bottom, they're only 500 right now. So you never know. Like you said, you just never know.
Absolutely. You mentioned the Padres, so I'll go to a different team in the division in the NL West there. The Dodgers, obviously, they've thrown a ton of money at the problem here. They've thrown a ton of money at the guys on the field to try to basically buy a World Series or at least put themselves in contention to be in that spot. And just like last year, I thought it was interesting. Just like last year, Kershaw started off getting shelled. He came in opening day, and my computer just froze on me, but I have the numbers up here. Let me go ahead and try to pull that back up. Give me one moment. There it is. So, nope, that's Greinke's start. I was going to talk about Greinke second, so I'll go ahead and talk about that. I thought Greinke looked phenomenal. Kind of picked up where he left off last season. Six innings, only 2 hits, 1 earned run, only walked 1. His strikeouts were a little low at 4, but 4 Ks in 6 innings, that's nothing to be concerned about at all. I thought his fastball looked phenomenal, and just all across the board, I thought he put together a really, really solid performance. Did you get a chance to watch either one of those games, either the Kershaw start or Greinke?
I didn't watch them, but I followed it. And, as you're saying, with Greinke, you expect a little bit more as far as strikeouts are considered, but when you're pitched 6 innings and you strike out 4, you're not going to be overly concerned about that. But, yeah, and then the Kershaw, I was really surprised about how badly he kind of pitched, but again, it's opening day, and you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to have a bad season or anything, but anytime there's a pitcher, Madison Bumgarner, for example, just pitched, I think, yesterday or the day before, and he got shelled. So it's going to happen. So you just have to sort of roll with it. But these guys are going to, you know, be there for the long haul, and they're going to show their true colors. So it's just one start, you know, and they'll probably have two or three more just like that. But it's these pitchers keep it to no more than two or three, and that's what separates them from everybody else.
Exactly. You know, you're going to see, like you just like you said, you're going to see these blow-ups every once in a while. But you know, I think we both know that Kershaw's going to put together another, you know, All-Star caliber and Cy Young caliber season once again. And I misspoke. He wasn't actually the opening day starter. Granted, he got the opening day start, but he did start in Arizona a few days ago. And you know, for Kershaw, I mean, this is, you know, I had imagined this is probably one of his career worst outings. You know, of his whole career, he went 6 1/3, gave up 10 hits. 5 earned runs. He walked 3, struck out 5, and gave up a homer. So yeah, that's I guess what I'm looking at there is there's only one way to go, and that's to go up from here. So he's going to continue to get better, and you're going to get the value that you drafted him at. Even though Mike and I both said, or you know, we're on the side of not drafting him in the first round, he's certainly going to bring you the value. So I thought it was interesting, so I wanted to mention it. We also had a couple of kind of standout performances. We had Archie Bradley, who finally came on the scene. You know, he's been hyped for a long time now, but he finally came on the scene and looked incredibly, incredibly sharp in his first start there. Got the win in six innings, a shutout ball. And, you know, so that's nice to see. You know, it's nice to see him come on the scene and look the part, because, you know, we've had somebody, you know, whenever, and I don't know about you, Mike, but whenever I think of Archie Bradley, for some reason in my head, Archie Bradley and Trevor Bauer are pretty closely tied together. For some reason, the two of them in my mind are very, very similar. So I think about them the same. And so, you know, on one side, Trevor Bauer is having a little bit of, you know, having a hard time, I think, trying to put the whole thing together. I mean, he's got the fastball. He's got the other pitches. He's got some of the other pieces. But in terms of a polished product altogether, he just hasn't gotten there yet. You know, Bradley was able to come out, like I said, 6 shutout innings. But what I like to see is that he only walked 1 and he gave up, or and he struck out 9. So, that's, you know, it's a good ratio as well. If you're in Roto League, you know, Bradley is somebody that I would consider picking up if you've got a low-end rotation guy or somebody that maybe has gotten hurt. I know that I picked up you know, guys like Andrew Heaney in a few leagues. And actually, Heaney right now is in AAA. And so, you know, Heaney is a perfect example. Is, you know, if you're hoping that Heaney makes it, you know, and turns it around and gets promoted and starts pitching for the Angels, you know, maybe it's time that you look at Bradley as somebody that's already in the majors, doesn't really seem to have much competition for his slot in the rotation, and looked great the first time out.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, someone that I also looking at and, you know, being part of the Giants, of course, is Heston. And Chris Heston is just looking awesome. His first game out, he pitched, you know, just beautifully, 5 strikeouts. He's pitching right now, in fact, in this game. Is I think they're in the 7th inning or 6th inning, and he's only allowed 1 run. So, you know, those kind of guys that you start seeing putting back-to-back games like that, that, you know, show up and might not know about, are definitely players that you want to stick on your radar to see how they're doing, and maybe even look to pick up if you need that help in that area.
Absolutely. You know, I'm looking at Heston's line. I'm coming up through the minors. He, you know, he ascended. It's, you know, it's pretty impressive. He went from rookie A ball 1 year to single A the next, double A the next, and triple A the next, and then the majors the next. So, you know, he's, you know, year after year, he was making a step up, didn't get bogged down in any one place. It's interesting, though, he got absolutely shelled in single A back in 2010. Went through some struggles, probably was working on some stuff. But then since then, you know, put up very solid numbers. You know, in AAA last year, he was 12-9 with a 3.38 ERA and 6.5 strikeouts per 9. So, you know, the one thing on Heston I would like to see, you know, if you're going to look at investing in him, you know, Heston's not somebody that I would necessarily go after unless I'm in a pretty, pretty deep league. So I'm talking, you know, probably 16 teams plus sort of thing, just simply because there's such a dearth of starting pitching talent as it is. But yeah, no, Heston is somebody that I certainly am going to be looking at pretty closely here going forward. And like you mentioned, he's on the mound today through five innings. He's only given up one run, one earned run, and one walk on against four strikeouts. So he's putting together another solid start here. Talk to me about the Giants a little bit. They seem to be scuffling a little bit. They seem obviously it is an odd year, right? So it's 2015. So they're obviously not going to make the World Series run this year because it's not one of the even years. But one way or the other, they don't look great so far. They're at the bottom of the division, but they're 3-4. Madison Bumgarner, just like Kershaw, I'm not worried about him at all. But he looks great actually in his first start. And so that's somebody that I'm trying to acquire if possible. I guess I guess simply because I imagine if somebody drafted him, they probably drafted him high enough that they're not looking to move him. But are you? I know that we talked like a few weeks ago that you were liking this Joe Panic kid. Do you still like him? Do you think he's still the answer at second base? Just give me a rundown of what you're looking at for the team there.
Yeah, Panic is not doing as well as I would have liked to hope so far. The one person that I really like that's performing well is Aoki, and he's definitely getting the hits. I mean, he's batting .438 right now, and he's going to get on base quite a bit because he is a leadoff hitter there, but don't expect anything from power at all from him. He's going to hit maybe one or two home runs at the most. So he's not a power hitter. The Giants overall lack pretty much power hitting. When you have, Pagan batting third or fourth, it just really emphasizes how bad off they are with that power hitting. But obviously they're missing Pence too, so they're not having someone, Posey, Belt, and Pence will, definitely pick that up a little bit. So as of right now, anybody that's like a free agent, I would probably stay away from. Maybe put on your radar, but I definitely wouldn't pick up anybody from the Giants right now that might be available to you.
Yeah, that's fair. Let's go ahead and move actually across the league. Let's go to Houston, which, once again, I find it interesting that Houston is actually tied for first in the division. Granted, they're 3-3. I actually happened to go to opening day this year. I think the last podcast was clearly on Monday, and it was right before that game. And lo and behold, Kluber comes out and no hits us for the first, or I say us, no hits the Astros for the first five and a third. And then I think he gave up like a bloop single or something like that. Long story short, he came out after seven and a third after one run ball, and the Astros did end up dropping that game 2-1. And since then, I saw a stat after a game four, I believe, that they had 32 strikeouts to seven hits as a team, and so that kind of surprised me in a bad way. But I'll tell you, the one bright spot that I'm looking at here, and I'm falling in love, more and more every day here, as somebody that I think, could be a quality add in your deeper league, and maybe even as shallow as like a 12-team three outfielder league, is Jake Marisnyk. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to watch Marisnyk play this year, but in five games, granted it's a very small sample size, but his skill set kind of projects to these things. So what I'm seeing is kind of what I'm believing as well. But he's batting .400. He did pop a home run. But the more important thing is that he's got two stolen bases. The guy is quick as anything. He was drafted back, or I'm sorry, he debuted back in 2013. Kid's only 24 years old, and the Astros have said that they're going to give this guy a shot to kind of solidify himself in the center field spot or not. And I think he's kind of getting trial by fire here, and so far I like what I see.
Yeah, he's he had five RBIs, like you mentioned, two stolen bases, hitting .400 right now, slugging percentage at .667. So, yeah, he's definitely putting it together a pretty good year for himself and making a statement. I don't really know who else they would probably put in that center field spot, but they got a pretty good outfield with him and Springer and Rasmus. So the Astros are looking up and up every minute that you sort of like turn around, they look better and better.
Yeah, I think the Astros as a projection, looking forward, look great. I mean, they've got what's reputed to be the best, if not maybe the second best, farm system in the majors. They've got, you know, a pretty good wealth of talent at the major league level at this point. You know, you still have John Singleton that's kind of trying to figure it out. You know, Altuve is somebody that you love. Obviously, we've talked about that many times, and he's quickly becoming one of the better, if not one of the best, second basemen in the game, much less just the American League. You've got George Springer, who's kind of coming into his own. I don't know if you saw a couple days ago. Did you see that catch he made at the wall? Did you see that catch that Springer made?
Yeah, I did. That was pretty awesome. He banged up against that wall, and yeah, it was pretty nice catch.
So, you know, bottom 10, bases are loaded. You know, obviously they were at home, so it was the top of the 10th, but it doesn't really get into any more of a pressure situation than that. And, you know, the batter grooves one deep right field, and Springer leaps over the wall. I mean, his glove was at least a foot and a half over the wall and snags that thing away from a home run. And then the Astros ended up winning the game in the 14th. So, you know, I like to see that. One of my concerns, I guess, with the longevity of the Astros is kind of twofold. Number one, I'm not really sure that their rotation is going to be able to hold up against the grind of the season. I mean, you've got Dallas Keuchel is on top, and he came out his first start and looked great against the Indians on opening day. I really liked what I saw there. But then after that, it gets a little dicey. I mean, you've got Scott Feldman, Colin McHugh, Roberto Hernandez, and then, you know, someone I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name. Actually, I guess I will. Wojciechowski.
Yeah.
You know, and so after the top, it kind of falls off pretty quickly. And then secondary to that, you know, I would maybe be okay with that rotation if they had a bullpen. But you know what, Mike, they really don't. I mean, they've got Luke Gregerson, you know, slated in as closer right now, which I've got no problem with that. I think Gregerson is serviceable. I think he's obviously going to blow some saves for you. He's no Aroldis Chapman, but at the same time, he's not. You know, he's going to keep you in the game more often than not. But after that, once again, it kind of gets a little rough. I mean, you've got Chad Qualls, who has been incredibly inconsistent. I mean, you know, he'll go on a tear for a couple weeks where he's just a shutdown guy and nobody can even get on base. And then he'll go through some time where he is just getting lit up. And so it's kind of hard to get some consistency out of him. Pat Neshek is, in my opinion, Pat Neshek is kind of more of a filler guy than anything. I don't really think that you can rely on him. He's not gonna lose games for you, but he's somebody that can be inconsistent at times. And then rounds out, with Sip, Harris, Thatcher, and Samuel Deduno. Once again,
yeah.
None of these guys are really, you know, can be counted on in a 9 out of 10 times type of situation. I mean, these are guys that, you know, maybe 2 or 3 times out of 10, they're going to give up a run or two. And you know what? If you're in a close ball game or if you're in a tie ball game, those things turn into losses really quick.
Now, what would you give their starting pitching as a grade as a whole? Would you think maybe a B minus, C plus?
I mean, you know, no, I think on the scale, I mean, on the scale of A through F, you know, B or B minus, I guess B or C plus is about average. And these guys, I think these are guys are a tick or two below average. So I'm looking at a C or a C minus here.
Okay. And what about their bullpen?
I mean, the bullpen is that needs help. I mean, I'm not a Tony Sipp fan, but, you know, I could just have a different read than other people on him. And if he puts together a good season, that's fine. But just in general, I'm just not a fan of his. I saw him a couple days ago, and he looked fine. You know, in 4 innings this year so far, he's got a 2.25 ERA and 4 Ks. Last year for the Astros, in 50 innings, he had a 3.38 ERA with a ratio of Ks to walks of something I can't tell you right now because it's not in front of me. Oh, there it is. 63-17. So, you know, the numbers look good. I mean, the numbers probably don't back up what I'm telling you. You know, in terms of inconsistency, you know, a 3.38 ERA is you know, solid for a major league reliever. But my only argument to that is that last year he was in a lot of low leverage situations. They were putting him in situations where he was the guy coming into the game right after the starter. You know, if the starter came out after like 5 or 6 innings, and so he wasn't really in high pressure situations. And if they're expecting Sip, my understanding, at least so far this year, is they're expecting Sip to to set up the closer, whoever the closer may be, whether it's Neesek or Gregerson. And in that role, I'm not as confident is really all I'm going on there.
Yeah. No, I agree with you there. I think that for sure they that's probably the worst part of their whole team is their bullpen. When you have so much of a average to maybe just a little bit above average in Gregerson as your closer, then, I think that's a telltale sign of a weakness on a team.
Right. Yeah. I think you hit it right on the head. I mean, if you look at the great teams around the league, most of those great teams, they've got a shutdown closer, because at the end of the day, I mean, if you've got somebody, if you can turn a 9-inning baseball game into an 8-inning game, you're going to win a lot of games. And what I mean by that is if you have a closer that's just so dominant or so reliable that, once if your team is leading after 8, you basically can write that as a win because the guy's going to come in and do the job. I mean, that can win you, 10, 12 games a year. It can be a huge advantage.
Right. And as far as you can go down, I mean, if like the Royals, their bullpen, I think, is a really testament to what you're saying there. When you can go 6 innings with an average starter and then put in, the next 3 guys that, could be a reliever, and you shut them down, then you're going to win the game. And that's how the Royals made it all the way through, was the fact that they had an average starter and the bullpen carried the rest of the way. And so, and the Giants have been making that happen as well for them each and every year. So, yeah, I think that's exactly where you want it for the MLB is to have, some good starters and then have the bullpen depth and just carry your team through, victory after victory.
I mean, exactly. You brought up the Royals. I mean, that's a great example, Mike. I mean, I think last year, most of the time, the Royals turned this 9-inning baseball game into a 7-inning game because they had Wade Davis in the 8th and they had Collins in the 9th. And, by and large, you weren't going to score on those guys. And so, if the Royals were leading after 7, I don't have the numbers in front of me because I didn't look up the stats prior to the show. But, I mean, I bet you they won nearly all of the games that they were leading after 7 in because you just didn't score on those 2 guys. It didn't happen.
Right. Exactly.
So, keeping going here, Mike, for the benefit of you, for the benefit of the listeners, for the benefit of not doing the homerism thing, I didn't even lead off the show with the fact that the Red Sox are 5-2 and they're leading the division. And to kick that to kind of put the stamp on that one, the Yankees are at the bottom of the division at 2-4. So I'm pretty stoked about this. But, the Red Sox have looked really good. So Buchholz comes in on opening day and pitches lights out, just looked phenomenal. Had the curveball working, had the slider working, had the curveball working, was on, just on. And then, and so he gets the W on opening day, everything's looking good. And then, Buchholz will be Buchholz. And so the next game out, a couple of nights ago, he comes in and just gets destroyed, just gets murdered. He in his first, I want to say he went two-thirds, I can look it up while I'm talking here. But, he went two-thirds, I believe. Gave up 7 earned. He gave up a back-to-back home run to, and now I'm going to blank on who it was. Forget who it was, but, and I'm going to look it up as I'm talking about it. But he gave up back-to-back home runs. And I swear to you, Mike, either one of us, and I know that neither one of us have played, serious competitive baseball, anywhere past high school or anything like that. Either one of us could have taken both of those pitches out of the ballpark. They were just meatballs at the heart of the plate, thigh high, just kind of asking, will you please hit it? Because it was just bad. I apologize. I shortchanged him a little bit. He actually went 3 1/3, so not 2/3 of an inning. He went 3 1/3, 9 hits, 10 runs, 9 earned runs, 2 walks, 3 Ks. Certainly not what you want to see from your quote-unquote ace. He's somebody that it's so frustrating to watch him and to be a fan when he's on the mound because, a lot of the time, you saw it last year. In the first half of the year, Clay Buchholz was virtually unhittable. I mean, you couldn't touch the ball. In the second half of the year, he was serving up batting practice. It was tough to watch. But you know, backing off of that for a second. So the in general, the Red Sox look good. I like how Mookie Betts is putting together a solid season so far. He had two stolen bases, a home run, and he robbed a home run all today, which is nice to see. You've got the Blue Jays that are right on the Red Sox heels at 4-2, and the Blue Jays. You know, we've been talking about it for weeks now, but the Blue Jays are showing what they're about. I mean, you know, their pitching staff is keeping them in ball games. But their hitters are you know, their hitters are mashing. I'm curious, Mike. I think we talked about this off air, but I want to ask you this anyways, and kind of brought to my mind just now. If you're sitting in a baseball game, and just kind of what would you rather in terms of entertainment, in terms of what you enjoy more? Would you rather see like a 12-11 ball game where the pitchers maybe get shelled, but you're seeing three or four home runs per side, or would you rather see like a 2-1 or a 1-0 ball game that's pitched really well? And the defense is executing and all that.
I'm more of the 2-1 guy. When it gets to be something that's like pitchers are getting shelled, and it's always fun to see a home run. But when you're seeing 3 and 4 and 5 go out, it gets to be a little bit ridiculous in my opinion. So I'm always more for someone that teams that are defensively matched and have great pitching staff and just go at it. And if the score is 2-1 at the end of the day, then it's 2-1. But I think that really shows how good teams are, is when they can, sort of battle all the way through all 9 innings. And everything becomes more and more interesting as the game goes on, because it's getting closer. So leaving someone on third base with 2 outs becomes a lot more important than leaving someone on third base with 1 out in the second inning, So it just becomes more and more, I think, dramatic as the closer, low-scoring games go.
That makes a lot of sense. And, I apologize, guys. I had one more note on the Red Sox. I'm not trying to hog the airwaves here, but this one's actually fantasy relevant, so it's not just me talking. Edward Mojica was I don't know what he was doing. I think he was doing his best impression of a little league pitcher at the major league level. That's certainly how he was pitching. He was getting absolutely rocked.
Wow.
I don't want to talk about it, so I'm just going to go past this. But he came into the Yankees game in the bottom of the ninth in a 3-2 ball game, and he's facing my favorite hitter, Chase Headley. And so in my head, I'm like, hey, you know what? Chase Headley is a fastball pitcher, so if Mojica throws him anything other than a fastball, Headley's going to, he's going to hit it into the ground, or he's going to get out or something. And now, while that's, a highbrow kind of forced opinion of Headley, and he's a better hitter than that, I still stand by that. He's a dead red fastball hitter. And what does Mojica do in a 3-2 ball game with the Red Sox up 3-2 away? So he decides to serve Mr. Headley a fastball, literally once again thigh high down the middle, and Headley took it out to right field, tied the game, and they ended up losing that game in 19 innings. So not only did Mojica cost the Red Sox a win, he also cost the bullpen an additional 10 innings of work, which obviously at this point in the season is not something you want to see. In the very next game, he gave up another home run. But let's move past that. The reason I'm mentioning that is because Koji Uehara has been slated back into the closer role. Uehara is healthy again. He's going to be, the Red Sox are in a save situation from here on out. Uehara is getting the ball, so I feel good about that. But the reason I mention that is because if you were in dire straits for saves, and for some reason you thought that adding Edward Mojica was a good idea, you can go ahead and drop him because he's no longer fantasy relevant at this point. Go ahead.
I just want to stay on Boston for a little bit here. A couple of things that have sort of impressed me about them. Number one is the fact that they're 5-2, and 4 of the games that they've won has been on the road. So right there, that's impressing me. And secondly is Mookie Betts, and the fact that this guy who's 5'10 and weighs, 150, 160, it has 2 home runs on the year already is also impressive. So what are your feelings on sort of how Boston's doing with both Mookie and the fact that they're 4-2 on the road?
I love what I see so far. The Red Sox have, they made some moves this offseason that were kind of questionable. Everything from the, bringing Wade Miley in and, sending out Will Middlebrook, the four-year, $80.5 million contract that they gave Rick Porcello. So some moves that were questionable at best. They started off the year not so hot because Christian Vasquez went down and had to undergo Tommy John surgery. So they're plugging in Ryan Hannigan at catcher. But you know what? They've got a phenomenal amount of talent on the field. You know, when you have your infield at Mike Napoli, Pablo Sandoval, Dustin Pedroia, Xander Bogaerts. I mean, so basically your worst infielder on the defensive side is Mike Napoli, and your worst hitter on the infield is also Mike Napoli. I mean, that says a lot, given that Napoli is really not that bad. I mean, he's struggling right now, but, it's obviously just six games in the season, so it means basically nothing. But, that says a lot. And then, in the outfield, you've got Mookie Betts. Mookie Betts is somebody that, and I don't want to overstate it because I don't want to get into, to projections and trying to nail this guy into, or trying to pump this guy up too heavily. But, I feel confident in saying that this guy is easily going to be looking at outfielder one, maybe mid-range outfielder two territory for years to come. He gives you the average. He gives you the home. He's going to give you enough home runs to make it worth it. He's going to give you, 10 to 15 home runs. He's going to drive in a number of runs, but since he bats leadoff, that's going to be a little bit tempered. But he's going to score you over 100 runs. He's going to steal 20-plus bases. I mean, so you're looking at a 15-20 guy who's batting at the top of a great order. So like I said, he's going to give you loads and loads of runs. So I love that. I'm a huge Daniel Nava fan, so I'm hoping that this year he gets more starts and gets more playing time. I know that there is a little bit of a logjam in the outfield, but as we both know, as I'm sure everybody else knows, Ruzny Castillo is actually starting the year as the league's most expensive AAA player at this point. But he's in AAA for the beginning of the year. But I don't think that's there's going to be a huge hole in the roster there. I think that people like Nava and Shane Victorino and Alan Craig are kind of going to be able to fill that slot pretty easily. Hanley Ramirez is off to a tear so far. I mean, in five games, he's batting .320 with three homers, seven RBIs, and four runs. I love that. And then Big Papi, he's scuffling a little bit, but they played a couple of games away in an NL Park over in Philly, and so he's probably just hasn't gotten the groove yet. I know it's a little bit long winded, but you know what, Mike? You asked me about the Red Sox. I guess you probably knew that was going to happen.
No, but that's good. That's what I wanted to hear. And one more thing, how's Hanley Ramirez been playing the outfield? Is he doing well, or what would you consider him out there?
So, I mean, the great thing about Hanley Ramirez in the outfield is because, obviously at home, I mean, he's playing half his games away. But when he's at home, he's stuck out there in left field. I mean, there's not a whole lot you can do wrong in left field in Fenway since it's such a short field there. I think the big thing is he's going to have to continue to get, used to the balls coming off the wall. I noticed a couple of days ago, maybe it was today, He played a ball off the wall. It was a fly ball hit the wall, and he was too far. He was too close to the wall, so it kind of went over his head. The guy didn't end up advancing, so it wasn't a big deal. But if he's going to play left field for them consistently, he's going to need to kind of figure out those bounces. That's going to come with time. So the short answer to your question is I do not believe he's a defensive liability. But at the same time, he's not going to be a guy that's going to lead the league in assists. I mean, he's not going to be gunning guys out at third or anything like that. He's got a good enough arm to be serviceable, but I think people are probably going to be – let me put it this way. If I were on the opposing side, I would be testing Hanley's arm basically at every chance I got for the time being until he proves one way or the other. I don't know if you remember, Mike, but when Yasiel Puig came up for the very first time, so he was brand new to the major leagues, he had a reputation for having a good arm, but nobody had seen it yet, right? So because he was in the major leagues for the first time. And lo and behold, for the first two or three weeks he was up here, people were running on him at will. And he threw people out like left and right. And it seemed like on a daily basis he was gunning somebody down. And so I think the same kind of principle is going to play here. I think Hanley's probably going to get tested, but I don't think his arm – I can guarantee you his arm is nothing like Puig's, but I don't think that it's going to have the same effect. I think Hanley may, he's going to really – okay, so let me back up. The short version, I guess, to your entire question is he's not a defensive liability, but he's going to need to figure out how to play the outfield because you've got to know you know, what bait to throw, you know, throw to on any given situation, all those kind of things. And so I could see kind of some growing pains. But at the end of the day, they've got, you know, they've got a good enough defense. So, you know, if there's a ball hit in left center, Mookie Betts is going to probably have, you know, more authority to take that ball. If it's, you know, if it's in the middle of Betts and Ramirez, I would imagine that Betts is probably going to take most of those. So you might see some of that. You may see some shifting. So, you know, Mookie may shade a little bit towards left field to kind of compensate a little bit. But I don't see this being a big issue at all.
Okay, that's really good for them, because I think that was one of our main talking points about how he was going to be as far as outfielder, if it was going to affect his hitting or not. But it seems like he's got it under control for the most part, and so his hitting should probably continue to be what it is now. And he's looking really good out there, so you got to hand it to him.
I mean. Exactly. I mean, I think the biggest thing for him is staying healthy. You know, I think he's still one of the best hitters in baseball if he can stay healthy. So, you know, if he can put 150, 155 games on the field, even 145 plus, something like that, you know, he's going to put up the numbers.
Yeah, for sure. Especially being in that lineup. I mean, amazing.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know if there's a lineup in baseball right now that he would get better protection in, given, you know, who's before and who's after him. Maybe if you're like JD Martinez over in Detroit, but you know, those two batting slots, maybe two of the best in baseball right now.
Yeah, I agree.
And okay, so moving on here, I wanted to cover a couple of injuries. I was actually going to talk about the Henderson Alvarez. He had a precautionary MRI after his last start, but I actually just got a notification via Twitter that Henderson Alvarez is actually going to be placed on the 15-day DL. He had some elbow soreness. It didn't seem like it was something to be overly concerned about, but at the same time, you know, when you have somebody going through a precautionary MRI on a pitching arm, that's never a good thing. And so this is something that I'm going to be looking at for pretty closely over the next couple days to see kind of what falls from that and what the results were. Do you have Alvarez anywhere, Mike?
No, I don't.
Yeah, so I've got him in a couple places. Unfortunately, one of those places is a best ball league, so I'm kind of riding that one out to hope, you know, hopefully he comes back here. But, you know, originally manager Mike Redmond had mentioned that he had some inflammation in his throwing shoulder. And, you know, it's notable that he did miss the first half of the 2013 season with a similar injury. He had some shoulder inflammation and was placed on the DL for, like I said, the second half of the 2013 season. And this is something that, you know, with somebody that has some issues in the same injury in the past, I'm going to be watching this one really closely. And this may be a pretty big blow to the Marlins. I mean, obviously, they've got the Jose Fernandez that is still coming back for Tommy John surgery. He's not really expected back until, June, July, somewhere in there. And then Alvarez was the number two. And so, you know, losing him is going to be tough. And, you know, we had talked, Mike, you and I had talked a lot about Matt Latos. And you know, I think both of us were kind of expecting him to do what he did with the Reds last year and do what he's done all his career. And just kind of, you know, he's not going to light people up. He's not going to turn too many heads, but you know what? Every time out, he's going to give you a solid outing. And his past time out for the Marlins in his first start, he got absolutely shelled. And so, you know, if Latos,
he got blown up.
He got killed. And so, you know, if that's the Latos we're going to see, the Marlins are going to be in a world of hurt. Now, I'm not sending off any alarm bells. I want to make it clear, guys, that, you know, when I say, you know, something to watch or something to be concerned about, you know, keep in mind that with a pitcher, I mean, you know, one start means nothing. And so, you know, watch what I'm telling you basically is to watch for these trends, because if these trends continue over the next 2-3 weeks, maybe a month of the season, then maybe it's time to do something. But I don't know about you, Mike, but, you know, for me, I try really hard at this point in the season to, you know, to keep the team that I've drafted, because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, for one reason or another, that guy's on my team because I drafted him. And so I try not to overreact to first or second week stuff. What do you think is it's kind of the line in the sand, so to speak? I mean, so how long are we going to wait till somebody like a Matt Latos, you know, let's say he has another two outings that are subpar. I mean, is that too much? Would you have already let him go at that point? Is three starts not enough? I mean, what's kind of your
like I said, you're lining the sand there.
Well, I think it depends on the player. Now, with Matt Latos, you're going to get games like he did in the first game where he allowed 7 earned runs. It's just what kind of a pitcher he is. And then he'll come out maybe the next game and just, you know, pitch 7 innings of, like, no-hit ball or something. You know, he's going to have games where he's going to blow up more than your typical ace. Madison Bumgarner is going to give up three games where he gets shelled. Latos is probably going to give up 5 to 6. So, and when he gets shelled, he gets rocked. And so I think what I'm trying to say is basically is that it depends on the pitcher. So if Latos goes 3 games where he's, you know, just not doing well, then I'm like, okay, well, we'll see what he does, you know, in 4 and 5. Now, if he continues it hits the 5 mark, then you already have, you know, you got another 25 starts to go with this guy, then you definitely want to say, okay, well, you know, he's hit his max as far as getting shelled. And if he does it again, then I'm definitely either thinking about moving him, depending on how, you know, how talented the guy is, either moving him or getting, you know, just dropping him altogether. So with someone like Latos, you probably took, you know, as your 4th or 5th starter. So it's someone that you're already on the line with anyways. And it all depends on, I guess what I'm trying to say, it all depends on how that pitcher is. You're not going to get too concerned with Latos if he gives up a couple. But if it's Madison Bumgarner who's given up a whole lot, then you're like, okay, there's something definitely wrong with the guy. So it just depends, I guess, on who the player is.
Absolutely. You know, tell me what you think about this, because, you know, if I'm in this situation, I don't happen to have Latos anywhere. But if I did, you know, Matt Latos is a guy that I don't think is very much above, if at all, above quote unquote average. And so if I had Matt Latos at this point, I would be more than happy to, you know, drop him and just, you know, stream pitchers out of that spot and try to, you know, accumulate some stats and just kind of move on, because, you know, yeah, you know, he's been reliable in the past, but, you know, like I said, I mean, he's not going to blow you out in any one category. So, you know, if you were to stay with him, I think the upside is relatively tempered. I'm not really sure, you know, if you're going to, you know, what kind of production you'd be getting out of him. And so I might be happy just playing the matchups and trying to get some extra starts out of some guys off the waiver wire.
Yeah, if you're definitely someone that, you know, is like us, where we definitely are putting our thoughts and concentration into our teams, definitely a way to go. If you're someone that just likes to casually do it, then, yeah, you definitely would want to trade him or release him for someone more permanent. So I think it depends on how much casuality you are as a player. And you're absolutely right. Latos is someone I avoid just because I know he's going to just give out these huge games. And to me, he's just not worth having on my roster to have those, you know, 6 or 7 games where he's just dominating. So, yeah, it's one of those pitchers that I stay away from. But if you're definitely looking to get rid of him, I would say, yeah, you could either trade him for something or just get rid of him altogether.
Yeah, you know, I think that's fair. I think that I was looking at Latos's numbers. I was actually so I paused because I actually wasn't sure, because I didn't even want to say it because it didn't look right. But in that one start, he had a 94.5 ERA and a 12 WHIP.
That's just wow.
Oh, that's brutal. Oh my God. So moving on there, Matt, if you're listening to the show, I apologize. I don't hate you as a person. Just the first start you had was rough. Moving on here.
I like what they say. I was looking at RotoWorld, and they say that, it's a solid bet that he's going to improve on his 94.5 ERA and 12 WHIP. Yeah, I would say that's kind of a solid bet.
You know what? As far as Vegas goes, that's about as solid as it's going to get.
Yeah.
All right, so we've got moving on. So let's get off the Latos train here. So I'm going to jump over to the NL West for a second. Give a quick rundown there. Obviously, the two heavy hitters in that division are the Dodgers and the San Diego Padres. And I say heavy hitters simply because of the offseason moves, the salary, and all the kind of the hype, so to speak. But I'll tell you, so far, I'm liking what I'm seeing out of the Rockies. You know, they're first in the division at 4-2, so they're winning some ball games. But you know, more so, what I like is that lineup. I mean, good Lord, you know, they've got, you know, that outfield. I don't know if there's a better offensive outfield than they have over in Colorado. They've got Charlie Blackman, who is the worst out of the three. Then you've got Corey Dickerson and Carlos Gonzalez, who I think may have a shot at both finishing the year as top 10 outfielders. I mean, both those guys are absolutely raking right now, so I'm loving seeing that. You know, I've actually been playing, you know, a lot of DFS the last week or so, and I've been most days I've been putting one or two of those guys, and some days I've been putting all three in my lineups because I love it so much. You know, the Rockies have the best shortstop in the game, bar none. It's not even close in Troy Tulowitzki. You know, if he's able to stay healthy, he's going to put together an MVP caliber year. You know, you can mark that down. And then, you know, they've got Justin Morneau at first, who just seems to never age, seems to be putting together another solid season. DJ LeMahieu over at second base, I'm loving seeing that. I mean, I've loved this kid for a couple of years now, so I'm liking seeing him kind of emerge and get some full-time playing time, number one, but also taking advantage of the opportunity, just like he did last year at the back end of the last year. They gave him a few at-bats, and he was able to do something with it, which is awesome. And then, you know, for my money, I think Nolan Arenado is projected to be, in my head at least, in 2 years from now, probably the number one third baseman in baseball. You know, he's carrying the cover off the ball. He's a gold glove caliber third baseman on the field. I'm loving that. I think the big question, you know, I don't think it's anything to be shocked at, but the big question, Mike, is can they hold the opposition to few enough runs at home that they can stay in ballgames? Because their starting pitching actually this year is pretty solid. I mean, they've got Eddie Butler, who's a rookie, who's put together a couple of good starts. They've got some other solid pieces in the rotation. But I think, you know, like I said, I think the game is going to be, can they stay in ballgames, and can, you know, because they're going to be able to outscore people, but can that pitching staff hold people to few enough runs where they're able to win?
Yeah, you know, and that's always the major thing, especially when you're in Colorado, is it's really not a home field advantage for either team. You could say that, you know, whoever goes into Colorado has just as much of a chance of winning than Colorado does. So it's not a home field to, you know, Colorado at all. And, you know, they're going through some pitching problems. LaTroy Hawkins has been demoted. So he obviously didn't work out too well. I don't know if they're going to permanently demote him or what, but as far as now, he's not the closer.
Yeah, you know, I think Hawkins has kind of maybe overstayed his welcome there. I think they're going to give Ottavino a chance. And you were mentioning somebody else. Who was the other guy that you thought was going to get some save opportunities here?
It was, yeah, you're right. I just can't think of him offhand right now.
I'm blanking on it, too. I apologize. So well, actually, if you wouldn't mind looking that up, because I want to come back to you in a second here. But I thought it was interesting that to kind of illustrate my point. So on opening day, the Rockies came out, you know, in full force and won 10-0. So that's, you know, let's just kind of cut that off of the sample size. You know, great outing, scored 10 runs, held them to zero, which is awesome. But I think it's interesting that the next five games in a row, so ever since opening day, they've scored exactly 5 runs in every single one of their ball games. They won 3 of them and lost 2 of them, but they won a 5-2, 5-4, and 5-1 ball game. And they lost a 9-5 and 6-5 ball game, and so that's kind of, it kind of illustrates my point that, you know, averaging 5 runs a game is great. I mean, most teams, if they were averaging 5 runs a game, they'd be winning all of them. But you know, with the Rockies, you see it there with those two losses at 9-5 and 6-5. You know, they're scoring 5, but that bullpen is just not able to hold it together. And so, you know, I think if they're able to consistently do, you know, have this production, they're going to be a better than 500 team. But in that division, they're going to need to figure out the pitching, because if they, you know, once they get later in the season, they're going to have a problem if they're not able to to hold the Dodgers and the Padres. You know, once those teams get up to snuff and actually, you know, and find a rhythm and are in, you know, mid-season form, the Rockies are going to have a tough go of it.
Yeah, exactly. And then the other one, you have Ottavino, as you mentioned, and then Rafael Bentancourt. So they're probably going to mix and match with those two pitchers for the closing position as of now.
Gotcha. That makes sense. That makes sense. You know, over in Cincinnati, they you know, they're looking good. You know, it's funny. We talked about it last week, and it kind of came to fruition, which is always kind of nice to see. You know, it's nice to see something and then kind of have it happen. And what we were talking about last week was Billy Hamilton kind of getting an uptick, in my opinion, or you know, I guess in both of our opinion, because we were both talking about it, in value because Votto was sitting behind him and hitting behind him. And in this first week, you kind of saw that happen time and time again. You see Hamilton get on. I saw him get on with a bunt single once, then he stole second. Votto hit a single and he came in. Another time, Hamilton slapped a single up the middle. Same thing, Votto. Votto actually at that time had a single on the next pitch actually, and then went to third. I mean, so you're seeing that. And so I think Hamilton in that lineup is set up for a really big year this year. And you know, a lot of guys across Twitter and across some of the other places that I'm looking are still very, very low on Hamilton. They don't think he can hit. They don't think he's going to be able to get on base enough to be valuable. And so, you know, if I were you, I'd go to try to grab him. You know, I don't think you're going to have to pay a lot. You know, if you're having to pay outfielder one prices, I mean, if you're having to give up somebody like a Bryce Harper or something like that, definitely don't, you know, I wouldn't be looking at it at that price. But, you know, if somebody's willing to send him to you for maybe a middle of the line rotation guy, or you know, somebody else that you can, you know, a couple guys maybe you can afford to give off. You know, maybe you have some depth at shortstop or something like that, or third base. This is somebody that I'm gonna put my chips in the middle, so to speak. I mean, I think Hamilton is a lock to steal more than 50 bases. I think he's, you know, probably closer to 60 or 70 if he can get on base enough. But I think he's a lock for 50. I think he's gonna put together a season of 275 or so, and you know, with those numbers, I wouldn't be surprised to see 110 runs, 115.
Yeah, you're definitely going to see the runs and the stolen bases that are probably going to either lead the league or going to be, you know, in the top three. So you definitely want to get him involved just because of who's batting behind him. You have Votto, you have Frazier, you know, Phillips, Bruce. You got some hitters there. So he's going to score a whole lot just being the leadoff hitter. And then when you compound that with some power hitters and the way he can move to get into scoring position, you're looking at a whole lot of runs and a whole lot of stolen bases. Unfortunately, his average is probably going to be probably about 250, 260, but you know, you're not getting him for his average or his home runs. You're getting him because he can get on base, he's going to score, and he's going to steal bases.
Yeah, you know what? And while I think that's fair, I wouldn't put it out of the question for him to hit closer to like a 280 number. I wouldn't say that that's impossible. It's not likely per se, but I wouldn't say that, you know, that would be unexpected per se. The other big thing, Mike, that I wanted to go over with you is Yan Gomes. I mean, you know, we had talked about when we did our catcher's show that he was, you know, solidly in both of our top fives. I actually, after our show and kind of before the season, you know, obviously I was messing with my rankings a little bit, kind of tweaking here and there every few days and whatnot. And Gomes actually eventually made it to my number three spot in my catcher's rankings. And so, you know, when he went down with this MCL sprain a couple of days ago, on Sunday. Well, no, it was on Saturday, wasn't it? Yeah, on Saturday. It's a couple of days ago. You know, he's expected to be down for, 6 weeks to 8 weeks, you know, for a couple of months here. So that's a pretty big blow. You know, unless you're in an incredibly shallow league, and I'm talking probably like an 8-teamer or something like that, Yan Gomes is not somebody you're going to want to be dropping unless unless you don't have a DL slot. I don't know if I would carry Gomes, you know, on my active roster, but I imagine all the leagues out there have at least one DL spot. And Yan Gomes is the perfect candidate to be sitting on the DL. And Mike, who's expected to replace him? What's happening in Cleveland at the catcher spot at this point for the next couple months?
So they're looking at Roberto Perez stepping up and taking Gomes' situation, and he's doing really well as far as taking that role on. He's batting right now 286, but he has one home run, three RBIs, one run, and only one strikeout, with two hits at seven at-bats. So he's sort of Yan Gomes himself a little bit there. And, you know, if you do own Yan Gomes, I think definitely this would be a good guy to grab just so you can back him up, because with those MCLs and ACLs, you don't know how long it's going to be lingering. And if he does go down again, at least you have his backup, which seems like he's doing a, you know, pretty darn good job batting for Gomes.
Now, I know that from, at least from an offensive standpoint, talking about from a fantasy standpoint, I know that Carlos Santana in the past has obviously played a lot of catcher. Are the Indians thinking about, you know, throwing Santana back there at all, or is he firmly in the infield at this point? His catching days are behind him.
You know, I think they might, if, you know, for a day off or something, throw him in there for Perez. But for right now, Perez is pretty much locked in as the starting catcher.
Yeah, so, you know, I think it's safe. You know, at this point, I was telling Mike and I were talking off, off air before the show that, you know, the industry average, so to speak, or the industry standard has kind of skewed toward these two catcher leagues. And Mike was telling me about a league, you know, this doesn't apply to Gomes because he's in the AL, obviously. But Mike was telling me about a league that he's in that's a two-catcher NL-only league, which is just insane. I mean, those league-specific leagues that are two catchers, I mean, it gets short real quick. But you know what, I'm going back for a second, Joe, but if you're playing in a two-catcher league, let's say a 12 or 14-team mixed, so not just AL or not just NL, but a mixed league, I'm not sure – I'm not sure that the Perez is going to be the answer for me, simply because, I'm not entirely convinced that he's the long-term answer. I mean, you know, last year in 85 at-bats, he only had one home run and four RBIs. In his minor league career, he was basically an all-glove, no-bat guy. So I think you're seeing what to expect. In 85 at-bats last year, he struck out 26 times, which is that's a pretty large number. And so all of these things point to, I wouldn't be surprised, Mike, if in a month or so. So, for the next month, I think the Perez is a solid bet to be the catcher. And, if you want to invest in him for the next month or so, that's totally fine. But be wary of the fact that I'm not entirely convinced that the Indians might not try to find someone outside of the organization to bring in. Simply because I don't know if Perez, once he's, the everyday guy, I mean, because obviously, starting – once every 3 or 4 days it's a different world than starting every single day. And so, while I see this possibly working out kind of as a stopgap, I would be wary about owning him in a deeper league, because there may be better options. To that point, and the reason I bring that up is because one name that I would put over Roberto Perez in this exact scenario is JT Realmuto down in Florida, down in Miami. They actually just called him up yesterday. Salcio Almaquia has done nothing. I mean, I think he's got one hit on the season. And so I think JT is going to get an opportunity to start. And I'm definitely more confident in JT Realmuto's batting than I am in Roberto Perez's. And so that's something, if I was looking at Perez, I may go with Realmuto. If you're convinced that you want to be, if you want to go the Indians route and you want to stay just consistent in having your Gomes' backup, then I totally see that. But the only reason I say that is because, and I'm going to take it outside of context because I think it's the best example. Mike, and I'm going to pose it to you as a question because I'm curious. When you're drafting a dynasty football league, let's say that you draft Marshawn Lynch in the second round in a startup dynasty league, okay? Are you the type of owner that's going to definitely, and I mean definitely, own Christine Michael on that team? So you're going to go out of your way, even if you have to reach a round or two, you're going to grab him? Or are you somebody that's okay with running with just the stud and you don't need the backup?
I like the fact that, like, say with Marshawn Lynch, right? I'm not too worried about him being hurt because he hasn't shown any reason for him to get hurt. So for him, per se, I would probably look at garnering other picks instead of wasting a pick on someone who may or may not play. Now, if you're looking at a player, say, if Ahmad Bradshaw was starting for somebody, then he's been hurt pretty much every year. So you might want to grab his backup, definitely look at who the backups are for that team. So if someone looks surprising to you, looks really good, that all he needs is that opportunity to get on the field and can perform well, then you might want to hook up, you know, that as you, as your backup. But it all depends on who it is. So I, if he's pretty much, you know, indestructible, then I'm going to avoid it. If he's looks like he's been hurt and could get hurt again, then I'm more than willing to sort of grab that backup if that backup is someone that I can trust to do a good job on the field.
So I think you hit it right on the head, and I love the way that you phrased that. If the backup is somebody that you can trust, I have no problem owning him. And I think that's a perfect synopsis of what I'm trying to say here, because in my opinion, if you look at just the two players, if you're looking at just forgetting Yan Gomes for a second, if you look at just Roberto Perez and you know the guy that I mentioned, JT Realmuto, and you can even throw Caleb Joseph over in Baltimore in the same conversation for the sake of argument. If you look at those three guys, just comparing those three, I think the one out of those three, I would probably take Joseph. So let's take him out for a second. But out of the two, because I think Joseph's going to lose his job in you know 2 or 3 weeks when Wieters comes back. But looking at Realmuto and Perez, I think I would trust Realmuto more for consistent output, and so that's why I would go that direction, because I'm not exactly tied to the Cleveland catching situation, and so why do I need to be, right? I mean, yeah, but Yan Gomes went down. There's no reason why I have to go for his backup. I can go a different direction.
Yeah, if you're not an owner of Gomes, then, you know, you definitely might want to consider who else is out there. And then I think that's the biggest issue is especially for catchers is who, you know, who is available on your waiver wire to sort of fill that role for Gomes. And you know, I don't know if Perez is going to be a long-term fill for him. Just because as you mentioned, you know, a couple days here and there are a lot different than when you're full time. You know, that's sort of like the backup quarterback coming in for the starter and throwing 300 yards and three touchdowns. You come back the next week, that defense is going to be prepared for you.
Well, no, if you're Matt Castle, you do that for 1 year at Tom Brady, and you get paid a ton of money to be terrible the rest of your career, so it works out.
Yeah. Yeah, and keep getting paid too. You know, you go to Minnesota and you get paid there, and you know, you just constantly make a living off of, you know, one game, and yeah, it's great.
I mean, it's pretty good, right? Like, you know, he comes in for in his defense, it wasn't one game; it was 15 games. It was a whole season. But he comes in the Patriots, you know, playbook, and basically kind of gets gifted some wins, and then gets thrown, you know, tens of millions of dollars at him. It's pretty good life. I apologize. I don't want to talk about football. Let's go back. there are some other injuries that I think are of note. And guys, one of the reasons that Mike and I aren't going over kind of some of the day-to-day stuff is because this is a weekly podcast. We're trying to give you kind of some of the overview stuff. We're not going to get into some nitty and gritty details because you know you're not going to hear us on Wednesdays. You're not going to actually you are going to hear us on Wednesdays, but it's going to be a syndication of the same show on Asylum Sports Network, so it's not going to be new information, unfortunately. Mike, you and I need to talk about possibly getting on air for some new content a second time a week. I think that would be really helpful. But as it is now, you know, we're only doing this once a week, and so I'm going to kind of fly through some of these injuries that I think are of note. I'm really going to only mention the ones that I think you know are going to have some ramifications going forward and things that you should watch out for. The one that I wanted to start off with is Cole Calhoun. Now, he was only sidelined. He's day-to-day. But the reason I think it's important to note is because it's a calf injury. Now, he had a broken foot last year. So calf and a foot, obviously, they're both, you know, lower part of the body, but they're not necessarily related. But anybody that has multiple leg injuries is just a red flag for me. So it's something I want to watch. But I'm really high on Calhoun this year, which is another reason I think he's primed. If he can stay on the field and stay healthy, I think he's primed, to have a phenomenal year this year and kind of show people what they were expecting and kind of getting excited for last year before he went down. Do you have Calhoun anywhere in your league?
No, I escaped him as well.
So you know, it's interesting the word choice you used there, because I was just about to say, you know, I think that this may be a good time to try to buy him on the cheap. If somebody like me, if somebody, you know, is expressing some concern about the injury and kind of, you know, not sure what to do, or, you know, a little freaked out, I might try to capitalize and throw him an offer and see what happens, because, you know, if you can get that guy on the cheap and he does end up, you know, staying on the field, you're going to be handsomely rewarded for that. So, you know, I kind of watch out for that and see what shakes out. Jonathan Schoop over in Baltimore had the grand slam a couple of days ago to win the game there, and then sat out the game yesterday with a quadricep injury. Once again, just day-to-day, so I don't expect that to be a big deal, but it's something certainly to keep an eye on, just simply because of the injury type. Billy Hamilton last year was out for a while with a finger, and once again, these recurring injuries are happening across the league, it seems. But he went down, once again, only day-to-day, but it's a finger, and, you know, given the type of hitter he is with those slap hits, you kind of got to have, I would imagine you got to have some good finger control. And so if he's not able to grip the bat, that may be a problem. So something to watch. Let's see. And then the only other big one that I wanted to go ahead and Mike, I actually want to get your opinion on this one before we talk about, the best way I can put it is, I was going to say buffoon before I qualified it, but the best way I can qualify Jenry Mejia at this point is a buffoon. The guy is just an idiot. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that in a second. But the other injury that I wanted to mention is Sean Doolittle. Sean Doolittle had some more examination, I guess, in the last couple of days, and he's looking like his stint on the DL may be a little bit longer than that we were hoping for. That shoulder is just, it's just not where they want it yet, and so he may be looking at a little bit of an extended stay on the DL. But so that's something to look for. Especially if you're desperate for saves and have him. You know what, Mike? There was one more. Oh, give me one moment here. Let me run back down these notes. I must have just skipped over the name. Oh, yeah, okay. I apologize. Felix Hernandez went down with a quadriceps injury. It was actually really interesting. In the first inning, he said that he had a cramp. I believe it was an oblique cramp or something like that. And then in the third inning, he came out of the game. Maybe it was the fifth. Now I'm blanking. But he came out of the game with a quadriceps injury. And for a power pitcher, a quad injury is not something I want to see. And so, granted, Felix Hernandez, don't talk about moving him. You're not trading him. You're not doing anything. But just be aware that this is something to watch. Try to be on the in front of the news here. So if he does, end up getting a DL stint here, make sure that you're prepared for that and just kind of be watching for it, because I think that it's possible that may happen because it's so early in the season. Mike, I know I just kind of blazed through those, but is there anything that you wanted to comment on any of those guys? But I think most of those are pretty straightforward.
Yeah, I think exactly. There's nothing I think that is anything different than pretty much what they are. So, I definitely, for Felix, you definitely want to, don't do anything with, for sure, and then just see how he responds later on, because, like you said, those things could be nagging. I think you covered it pretty well. Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to a topic that I don't want to spend a ton of time on, it because I think it's kind of gotten played to death, but I think it's interesting that so Jenry Mejia goes down, but he got caught with what's a drug called Stanzolol, and that exact drug has actually been tied to four different players from the Dominican Republic and the Central America area. In the last 6 months or so, four different guys have been caught with the same exact drug. And so my question to you, because each of these guys have said, and I think it's kind of the go-to response, and so when I hear it, it doesn't really, doesn't really stick with me, and I don't really, lend it any credibility. But the immediate response from all four of these guys has been, I don't know how they got in my body. I don't know what they're talking about. This is ridiculous. And so my question to you is there a scenario, and because, across major sports, you see the same thing. Is there a scenario where you think that it's actually possible that these guys are kind of deputizing a personal trainer, so to speak, as, the person that's responsible for the supplements that they're taking, and that guy, whoever that guy is, whoever that trainer is, isn't doing their due diligence in terms of what's allowed and not allowed on the MLB, on the MLB restriction list, and giving these guys something that they shouldn't be taking? I mean, is it possible, do you think, that these guys actually aren't aware that they're taking something banned? And the reason I ask that is because I imagine if you're a multimillionaire athlete and you've got a team of, you know, of PR people, and you've got all the, you know, personal assistants, and you've got all the stuff, I imagine, you know, number one on your priority list is probably, you know, while it should be, let me make that clear, while it should be, number one on your priority list in terms of supplements is probably not looking at the ingredients and looking at the exact ingredients on the entire bottle. I imagine you'd probably have, you know, somebody, I don't know whether it's a clubhouse guy or somebody else, you'd have somebody handing you stuff and you just kind of take it. Is there any credibility to that argument, or do you think this is complete bullshit and, you know, complete BS, and, you know, what you put in your body is up to you and it's your responsibility 110%?
And that's a great question. I think it comes down to how much you really want to put into the details. I do believe that there are people, mainly agents and, you know, other doctors that know exactly what are, you know, to do and what are banned substances. So it depends on the person. I think if you want to just say, okay, well, I want you to take care of that, then you are putting yourself into risk of taking something that might not be it, because either the agent doesn't know or doesn't care, or the doctor doesn't know or doesn't care. So at the very end, I think you as a person have to decide on what you want to do. And if you put all your utmost trust into those people, then there is a chance that you're going to get caught with something that you're not knowing that you're taking. And to me, that's just not a very good idea. I don't want my career or my name being tied to something that I'm not willing doing. You know, I'm checking. I have that list in front of me. I'm checking the ingredients. I'm making sure everything is A-okay, because the last thing I want to do is be suspended for 80 games because I trust my agent. And I just think it comes down to their responsibility.
Yeah, you know, I don't think there's any way around that, to be honest with you. I think you hit it right on the head. I mean, I think at the end of the day, what you put in your body is your responsibility. I don't care where it came from. I don't care who gave it to you. I don't care how you got it. What you put in your body is your responsibility. And you know what? If it takes you an extra 15, 20 minutes, you know, when you get a new supplement to read it and to contact the MLB and figure out whether you can take it or not, you know, it seems like that should be the process. You know, one of the questions I had, actually, and this was kind of more of a thought experiment than anything, because I don't even know if it's feasible. I don't know if it would be allowed. But one of the things that I thought of is, why don't the MLB players start getting all of their supplements, and I mean everything from protein to nutritional supplements to everything, why don't they start getting them directly from Major League Baseball? And so that way, if they get it from Major League Baseball, it's verified, it's proven, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. You don't have to worry about, you know, where you got it or, you know, some shady source or anything like that. I mean, do you think that's even possible to have some way to facilitate these supplements and whatnot getting directly, you know, getting funneled directly through the league for approval?
You know, I don't really know if say the FDA or whoever is responsible for that can allow that just because of certain guidelines. You know, so I don't know really the law on that, but I think that would definitely be a step forward if that's permissible, because then you're narrowing out everybody else who could be responsible. So if baseball has, you know, you definitely go to this place because it's MLB approved and, you know, buy this, then you're okay. And then if you're tested positive, well, guess what? You're not, you know, you're definitely doing something on your own to enhance your body. So I think that's a step forward. I just don't know if it's legally permissible to do so.
Makes sense. And you know what, Mike, and I may be throwing out the next $1 million idea here, but I'm going to go ahead and toss this out, because I want to see what you think about this. I actually have the idea as a secondary idea to that, because like you said, I don't know the legality. I don't even know if that would work. But one of the other things that I thought of is somebody needs to come out with an app, and the only function in that app is, let's say that you're a Major League Baseball player, you can scan the barcode of any nutritional supplement or of any medicine that you're thinking about taking, and it'll automatically tell you whether it's on the do not take list, if it's on the banned list. And so that way, that's a really quick check. you know, something, you know, you scan the barcode, it tells you, hey, you can take this, hey, you can't, and then you move on. And so there's no, you know, once again, there's none of this, oh, I didn't know, or, oh, you know, it was only, you know, blank, and I didn't realize, or anything like that.
Yeah, that is a good idea. I think we shouldn't have said that over the air, because, you know, I think that's a very good app, and, you know, let's not discuss it any further.
All right, never mind. I'm going to go back after the show and edit out the last 60 seconds. Never mind, guys.
Yeah.
Don't do that first.
I do agree with you. Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
You know, simple things like that, you know, and the reason I say that and the reason I'm bringing it up and want to talk about it a little bit is because it seems like the players, the league, and the fans all know that there's a problem, all know that there's an issue, all are like, you know, what the hell is going on? This shouldn't be a problem anymore. But none of those guys, none of those parties, neither the players, nor the owners, nor the nor the managers, nor the fans, nor Major League Baseball actually want to actually do anything about it. They're more interested in talking and more interested in kind of shunning the behavior, but they're not actually doing anything to fix the problem. And that's kind of one of my main issues. I think it's kind of become almost like a talking point rather than something to be done about it. I don't really feel like there's – I mean, you know, this 2015, you know, we should be able to fix, you know, any issue that we have in terms of drug policy, or, you know, drugs being taken by accident, or, you know, banned substances being found in somebody's body by accident. This problem shouldn't be happening. And you know what? There's got to be a solution. And I guess I'm just tired of the everybody in the game just kind of shunning it and not wanting to talk about it and not bringing it to the forefront of, okay, we all identify that there's a problem, let's do something about it. And you know what? I think it all kind of comes from the fact that, in my opinion, I don't really think baseball wants to do anything about it, because if baseball lets this continue to happen on at least some slow kind of little level, you've got guys that are coming back from injury faster, and that leads to the team being happier and probably, you know, winning more games because their talent is staying on the field. It turns into more runs, and, you know, the Major League Baseball seems to think, contrary to what both of us said earlier in this podcast, they seem to think more runs is a good thing. Now, you know, there's so many things on the side of, it's just obvious to me that baseball doesn't care, but I'm getting kind of frustrated, and you can probably hear it in my voice. It's become almost a point of contention to me. I mean, you know, 10 years ago, it was a serious problem. 10 years ago, I mean, people were, you know, talking about the game, you know, dying, and nobody wanted to play the game anymore because of this. And, you know, you fast forward 10 years, and it's still around. People are still talking about it. People are still getting suspended for taking steroids, for taking banned substances. I mean, you know, at this point, there's no point. You know, there's no place in the game. And I forget who it was, but somebody, one of the players, came out and said, you know what, let's change the rules. Very first test, I don't care if it's a false positive or not, very first test, 100 games. Second test, you're out of baseball. You know, second positive test, you're out of baseball altogether for life. And you know what? I think if you were to put those parameters and those ramifications on it, somebody that's making a few $1 million a year would look at a second time lifetime ban as, oh shit, I better not get that first one, because if I get that first one, you know, one more time, even if it's by accident, one more time, and I'm out of baseball for good, and there goes my livelihood. So the guy that's making, you know, $1 million a year, forget the guy that's making, you know, $20 million like some of these guys, that have got caught. You know, the guy that's making $1 million a year, I mean, you know, yeah, he may get his livelihood taken away from him, and that may be more of a wake-up call, because I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, but I think the fourth test now is lifetime banned. Is that right?
Yeah, I would, I'm not, I don't know for sure, but it sounds right to me.
I think it's the fourth one. And so give me your reaction on some of that, because, I mean, like I said, I'm sure I was a little bit long-winded there, but give me your reaction in terms of, you know, kind of the state of the steroid situation, and I mean, do you think the baseball is doing enough to fix it? And also, I mean, are you happy with where it kind of stands in this taboo status at the moment?
You know, I think you're pretty much correct when you're saying that baseball doesn't really want to do anything about it. Because I think they would have a bigger stance and more programs and more situations that would be able to fix this problem. And like you said, you came up with two ideas off the top of your head, and, you know, two ideas that could very well work, especially that app idea. You know, if you can mark everything down through FitnessPal and scan a food and it has every single thing on there, you can come up with an app that does the same exact thing but shows what you can and can't have. But it's been going on forever. I mean, you go back into even, you know, just recently, before the steroid era in the 80s, you had the drug era, and you had players like Norris who would be testing positive for cocaine. And, you know, he two or three times, and then I think like a third time he got banned for life from baseball. But then for whatever reasons, he was able to come back and pitch again. And it's maybe different type of drug, but it's the same situation. These players do it, they get caught, then they get, you know, suspended, and they come back, and the same thing happens, you know, once again. Melky Cabrera is another player, you know, just someone that has been caught doing it a few times, got suspended. You know, they even let him play the All-Star game. I mean, if anything that you want to say, like baseball is sort of maybe supporting this in a different kind of way, you could go back to the baseball where Melky Cabrera was in the All-Star game, but both the MLB and the Giants knew that he was going to get suspended after that game, that he had tested positive, I believe, a week before the All-Star game even took place. And everybody just sort of took a blind eye to it. And then after the All-Star game was over, they suspended him. So right there, I think that shows that MLB is sort of promoting, not promoting, but supporting these kind of situations.
Absolutely. And then two other ideas, and I'm just kind of talking off the top of my head at this point. I think we're just having a little bit of fun, you know, going a little bit into the fantasy realm here in terms of, you know, some ramifications. But, you know, what if you were to say, hey, you know what, if you test positive, I don't care what it's for, but you lose, not only are you lose this year's entire salary, we're gonna fine you the equivalent of what you made last year too, and you're going to pay that out of your game check going forward. And so next year when you're on the roster, you know, you'll be playing, but you won't be making money until you've cleared what you made in, you know, in the year previous. And you just kind of draw the line in the sand, be like, listen, you can do this, but you're not going to like the result. And the other quote unquote solution that I thought of is, you know, put it on the owners to fix this thing and say, you know what, if anybody in your organization, I don't care if the guy is a rookie ball, I don't care if the guy is your stud ace, if anybody in your organization gets suspended for taking a banned substance, you personally need to write Major League Baseball a check for $25 million and see what happens. Because I guarantee you that if the owners were on the hook for some serious amount of money like that, or if the players were at risk of losing 2 years' salary, something would change. This would change.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, who knows why they haven't actually stepped forward and applied these situations.
I think it's because of what you said. I think it's because nobody wants to do anything about it. Nobody actually wants to solve the problem.
Yeah, but then you got to go, why don't they want to solve the problem? Why, you know, why is it...
Because they don't see this one.
That's kind of surprising to me that... I mean, it's not that I'm disagreeing that they don't want to solve the problem. I just think, you know, one step further and going... Okay, well, obviously they're losing money and they're losing fans because no one wants to see their ball player suspended for 80 games, and you lose your respect in the league because of all these situations. It's like the NFL, where people are falling out of the NFL, fans are falling out of the NFL because of all the problems they're going through. Everybody's tired of seeing all these athletes drinking and driving and committing domestic violence and doing all these different things, and the sport has just lost interest because it's become more of a crime lord than actually a sport. So if you keep allowing these things, then you're just digging yourself a deeper hole.
Well, I mean, let's be honest, and I apologize if I offend anyone's sensibilities that is listening to the show, but Mike, you know, yeah, the NFL, it stands for the National Football League, but it actually stands for the National Felons League.
Without a doubt.
You know, so, and granted, this is not a football podcast, so, and we can get into that. So I didn't get a chance, unfortunately, to call into your show last week. I know I was going to, but I've got some stuff on my end that has just kind of taken all my time, which I'm actually really excited to talk about next week. we can't get to it this week, but I've got some really hot news, some stuff that I'm really excited about to share with the listeners for next week. But I was super busy and didn't get a chance to talk about it. Sorry, I just got sidetracked. I don't remember what I was talking about. What were we just talking about? Oh yeah, no. So you know, this isn't a football podcast, but I mean, I lost my train of thought. Mike, what were we talking about?
We were just talking about how bad the NFL is and the National Felons League.
Yeah, I forget what I was going to say. I was going to make a point, and I'm sure it was just me getting on my soapbox. So I don't need to say it. It doesn't matter.
But I think the point, we definitely nailed the point on how you know, these players don't necessarily are responsible for themselves. You know, and that's just what it comes down to, is that these people are adults and they just need to be more responsible for who they are. And whether it's the money that, you know, oh, well, you know, I lose 20 games. Oh, well, I lose, you know, $50,000. No big deal. Then, you know, it, who knows what it is, but they're definitely not being mature enough and taking care of their responsibilities well enough to not make sure that they're taking something that's illegal.
Exactly. And circling back real quick, because we only do have about 5 more minutes on the show here, you know, this Henderson Alvarez news is coming out kind of by the minute here. Only about 20 minutes ago, the Marlins came out and said that the MRI showed some inflammation, but no tear or anything like that in that right shoulder. And you know, he's expected to be out for what's quote unquote a month or less, maybe even close to 15 days. So they put him on a 15-day DL, and hopefully, you know, soon after that, maybe he'll skip, you know, one more start after he comes off the DL. But soon after that, I think he's going to expect to have him back. And then the other big injury, and I say injury, it's not actually an injury yet, but something I want to be looking for, because he had some hip problems last year. Devin Mesoraco, so far this year, before yesterday, was only 2-for-21 on the season. And so he underwent an MRI on his left hip, and it did show some, you know, what I can only call inflammation, because it doesn't actually really have any other information here. It just says he was feeling some discomfort. And Kyle Shipworth is coming in has been called up from AAA to be the Reds catcher the backup to Perez in Cincinnati. But Mesoraco, you know, for both of us, I think we're in our top three in fantasy
yeah.
baseball ranking. Last year, he missed like a month of the season with some injury time. So Mesoraco is somebody that kind of has consistently struggled with injuries here. And for a, you know, as a catcher, you never want to see a catcher come down with a hip injury, because obviously in that, you know, squatting for 9 innings a game, that hip takes a lot of stress. And so this seeing this early in the season doesn't make me very happy.
Yeah, and he's one of the guys that I have in most of my leagues, so I'm not too thrilled about that either. But yeah, just like you said, those hits are pretty tender, and I think definitely this has been bothering him for maybe probably a little bit while, because of, you know, he's definitely a lot better hitter than what he's been showing at the plate thus far. So I think it's time probably to shut him down for a while and get him some rest, and then he can come back stronger later in the season.
Exactly. No, I think that's definitely fair. Give me one moment here. I was going to bring up one other thing here before we sign off. But Mike, we're just a few minutes away from for signing off the air for today. So do you have anything else that you wanted to talk about today?
You know, the only thing that I kind of wanted to mention that I wanted to get your opinion on is the A's. I've looked up their starting lineup and stuff, and they look like they have a bunch of players of a bunch of nobodies that are doing pretty well this year. What are your thoughts?
I mean, my thoughts on that comment right there are, hey, you know, Billy Beane's at it again. But the A's have all of the pieces to be competitive. They've got, you know, solid pitching up top. They've got Drew Pomeranz, Scott Kazmir. So, you know, as a side note, it's great to see Kazmir, you know, have come back and solidified himself again as a legit starter. I mean, he was the number 5, I believe, overall pick back in. I don't know exactly if I'm going to make it up, but I think it was like 2009, 2008, something like that. And you know, He came up with Clint Everett up in the system over in Tampa Bay and kind of scuffled out of the league and actually was out of baseball for a year back a few years ago. But he's come back and he's had a little bit of a renaissance. So I like to see that. Jared Parker and Sonny Gray are also very good. Kendall Graveman has, he got lit up in his past start, but in spring training he looked really good, and he's somebody that I'm not heavily invested in him yet, but I'm certainly going to be looking at him going forward because I like what I see. I like the pedigree there, so I want to see him put together for a couple starts there, but I see no reason why he shouldn't be someone that they can rely on going forward. And then, the infield is kind of a hodgepodge of guys here. I mean, you've got Ike Davis, who came out from the Mets, and Ike Davis he's not one of my favorite guys, but he's gonna hit 280, 285 on the year. He's gonna give you, enough pop, 20, 22 home runs. He's gonna drive in, 80 plus RBIs, something like that. And so, Ike Davis is somebody that if you're playing DFS, if you're playing daily fantasy, he's somebody that, usually on a good salary and is pretty valuable there. And so he's somebody that I've been rostering quite a bit in DFS. And I think as a fantasy guy, he's more of like a second first baseman. I mean, I wouldn't be starting him on a daily basis, but if he is kind of an injury plug-in or an off-day off-day plug-in, I like that. This Mark Canha guy he's playing a little bit of first, a little bit of third. I think they had him in an outfield for a little bit a couple days ago. I like him. He seems to be seeing the ball well. I don't know how consistent that's going to be and how reliable going forward, but for now, you're getting some good value there. And then in the outfield, you got Ben Zobrist, who's one of my favorite guys, and he's not going to light you up in any one category. He's not going to, hit 30 home runs, 40 home runs, something like that. But, he's going to be consistent day in and day out. He's going to give you, a hit or two every single day, for the most part. He's going to probably finish, in the, I'd say, 280 to 290 range with some solid power. And so, once again, that's kind of an injury replacement or a bench guy. I like him a lot. If Doolittle can come back and really lock down the back end of that bullpen, I think that may be a key there. But that division right now doesn't really scare me. I mean, Houston doesn't scare me in terms of, contending. Texas is going to be in a world of hurt with Holland down for on the 60-day DL, as well as Darvish, out for the year with the Tommy John surgery. Seattle is going to be in there. I think Seattle is going to be in contention the entire year. But then you have the Angels, who lost Josh Hamilton. There's actually some talk about Josh Hamilton not even being in, playing for the Angels ever again. I mean, they're talking about just cutting ties altogether. And, Josh Hamilton's actually one of the other things I want to talk about this week, but it looks like, Mike, looks like we're going to have to table that for next week because, there's a lot to that story, and I didn't want to shortchange us there. But and hopefully by next week there'll be a little bit more information so we can get into more in-depth. But, Oakland, I would not be surprised to see them, lock in a wild card spot this year. I like their team. If they can, if they can stay healthy and if they can, stay in ball games with that bullpen, I think I like their chances.
Yeah, we'll see. I think that division is pretty tough. But, I definitely think they have an opportunity to win that division, and we'll see exactly what happens. But yeah, I think it's going to be. I think they're definitely going to be in the running.
I mean, Oakland always seems to be in it, and like I just said, but I think Seattle is really their only competition for the title there, because I don't see Houston, Texas, or LA really contending at the end of the year.
Yeah, definitely. Seattle for sure. I like Houston. I've liked them from the beginning, so I'm gonna stick with them for right now. But I think it's gonna be definitely between those three teams as far as who wins that division.
Yeah, no, I think you're right there. All right, man. Hey, great show today. We ran a little bit over time, so we got to get off the air here. But I had a great time this week. I know that. We've both been super busy, but I'm glad that baseball is finally back in the swing of things, and we'll continue to do better for next week, onwards and upwards. All right, Mike?
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
All right, man. I'll talk to you next week, man.
All right.
Have a good one.
Okay. You too.
You live it, breathe it, dream about it. You poured your blood, sweat, and tears into it. And this year, victory is yours. Because you've got FantasySportsWarehouse.com as your secret weapon. Fantasy Sports Warehouse is your one-stop shop for fantasy sports products, blogs, and the latest info. Go to FantasySportsWarehouse.com to get info to help you dominate the fantasy sports season wherever you go.
All right, guys, that concludes another episode of Pine Charter Talk. One more time, I'm Ben Samuels. You can find me on Twitter at @Roto_Project700. And my co-host, phenomenal as always, Mike Valverde at RFL Red Zone. You can find us syndicated on Asylum Sports Network. We're we are a broadcast on Wednesday evenings over there. And then we'll go ahead and do this again next week. Thanks, guys.